Hello and welcome to Pod Upon Parish, our very first episode. I'm John Fagan, the CEO of Scribe and Civic. This podcast is for everyone involved in parish, town and community councils. We'll be getting to know the people behind the community, sharing real stories and most importantly, sharing practical advice that you can all take away with you in your everyday role. So, as many as you know, we host a lot of webinars with brilliant guest speakers and we publish them all on YouTube. But let's be honest, it's not always easy to find the time to sit and watch them. So we had the idea of turning them into a podcast, something you can stick on while driving your car or walking your dog or while mowing the lawn, which is what I do. So this is a bit of an experiment. Let us know if it works for you. But please be warned, I am not a professional interviewer or host. There are mistakes, so be kind. I promise I'll get better and better as we go on. Right, our very first guest is Mark Tompkins, the creative director and founder of Aubergine, and we're going to be talking about the dreaded word assertion 10, the one that's giving a lot of councils a headache right now. Hey Mark, how are you doing?
John, I'm doing fine, thank you. Thank you very much. I feel absolutely honoured to be on your inaugural podcast. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, very, very exciting. So we've just had Christmas and New Year completed. How was your Christmas and New Year?
Yeah, okay, all right, yeah, not bad, you know, probably drunk far too much, ate far too much, you know, the fairly standard fare, very good.
So you were, you're a little bit naughty, so I guess I'm going to obviously ask the first question, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Well, annoyingly, frustratingly, probably like most middle-aged people, dry January is what I'm struggling through right now. If you're listening to the podcast in July, well then hopefully I made it out the other side. It's the 15th of July as we record today's podcast, so I'm halfway.
Oh, well done. I mean, I don't bother with dry January. Don't bother, you know.
No. Anyway, I'm trying. I'll definitely fall off the wagon soon.
Good. Yeah. So I know you very well. I see you out and about a lot. You know, we attend to a lot of the events, all the SLC events, the ALC events, and all the conferences. We normally have a few beers before or after an event. But yeah, tell me a little bit about yourself or the audience. So what do you do? What company are you working? What roles do you do?
All right. Thank you. So I'm the founder director of Aubergine. Aubergine, you may or may not know, we are one of the country's leading expert firms in building accessible and compliant websites for parish and town councils and public bodies for that matter. I'm a great champion and advocate for website inclusivity and accessibility. And, you know, we've got, as it stands right now, we've got over 650 parish and town councils on our platform with more joining each day. I'm a huge advocate of making sure that all information that's published on websites is available to everybody. I'm also a qualified councillor and clerk. I've been a councillor for 15 years, took my ILCA last year. So I do walk the walk and talk the talk.
Cool. Where are you counselling at then? Where are you counselling? Not counselling.
I'm a councillor in Eaton Bray, which is Bedfordshire.
Good, good. Well, you said you'd call it. So you've not been a clerk before.
No, I'm not an active clerk, but I took my ILCA last year, and I plan to take my SILCA probably 2028.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah. And why?
Well, because I think the more you know a subject, and obviously we live and we work in parish and town council sector every minute of every day, but the more you know the subject, the more authoritative and helpful and guiding you can be to the people that you work with. Knowledge is power. The more you know, the more robust you can be as an organization.
Cool. So we've got the webinar coming up in a minute. We'll invite everybody in. I think we've got like 200 people. I checked yesterday, 200 people signed up to join us today. So what are you going to be talking about today?
Today we are going to be talking about assertion 10. Assertion 10, if you aren't aware, is an element that was included in the Small Practitioners Guide, April 2025, for all parish and town councils to meet digital and data compliance. And that's going to include a whole slew of things that talks about domain names, email, website compliance, GDPR, IT policy. So I'm going to be shedding some light, demystifying a lot of those sorts of things that were included in it. It's quite a technical subject, so I'm going to be using plain speaking English. So hopefully everybody's going to be able to go away from today's webinar with knowledge as to what they need to know and do to meet their compliance of assertion 10 when it comes to AGAR later this year.
Awesome. Yeah, I've seen you speak multiple times. I'd say you're probably the best speaker I see on the circuit. You always,
You're too kind.
honestly, it's super. You explain complex problems in a really simple way, and the way you communicate is straightforward and very clear. So, you're the best man for the job. But I mean, what's the one mistake you see people make all the time related to this topic?
There are a number because it's quite technical, but I would say what happens a lot is the misunderstanding around the difference between domain names, email addresses, and websites. They are all interconnected, but they are three very different things. And so there's the misunderstanding between what the domain is, how it should be used, and really what the compliance levels are, whether everything should be .gov.uk or something else. So today's webinar is going to be demystifying those.
Cool. And before we jump in, the waiting room's building up now. Is there some Tell me something about yourself that not many people actually know. Is there something? Is there
Well,
something there?
there's a bit of a secret.
Oh, there is a secret. You've been more
There is a
into
secret.
traitors.
No. I go toe to toe with the world's sci-fi geeks at the weekend. I am a I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and I'm an artist in my private life, and so I produce Star Wars fan art, and I go and I exhibit it at sci-fi events and comic cons, and I sell it. So if you're into your Star Wars, or you know somebody who is, then head over to Instagram. You can have a look at my portfolio. It's Rebel Scum Art.
Cool. Yeah, I'm actually a follower of that. It's great. I mean, it's amazing your artwork. And you also do like time lapse videos, don't you, of you creating. But I actually thought you were going to mention something else because you last year you had a kind of some of your
And
own art.
another arty thing. Yeah, I'm now, I think probably from a percentage point of view, about 25% inked. So I've had a huge amount of tattoos done all over my kind of upper body, some of my dog, and other things that are important to me. So yes, I'm fully inked, and do you know what? We've got the SLCC conference at the end of the month, and there's a swimming pool there. I might just show it off and go for a swim.
Awesome, I'll be right there. Good, good. So yeah, the waiting room's built up right now. There's 100 in, so we're going to invite everybody in and say hello. Good stuff. Excellent. Okay, good. Right, so we're going to jump in. So today, I'm not sure if many of you met Mark Tompkins. He's quite well known on the speaking circuit. He's going to be talking about is your council assertion 10 compliant and ready? And it's also not too late. So, some of you guys might be panicking a little bit. Don't worry. After this session, hopefully you'll feel a bit more informed and calm. So how are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing very well, John. I'm very much looking forward to today. Hopefully, I'm going to help demystify a few of the grey areas of what this all means ahead of our audit time in a few months. John, thank you so much.
Can I just
So,
interrupt
what
a
is it that
sec?
you.
Can I just interrupt
Sorry?
a sec?
Yes, Andy.
Mark, I'd just like to put a bit of pressure on you. I'm at Freshingfield Parish Council,
Great.
and from Aubergine's Freshingfield Parish Council website goes live on Monday.
Yes, I know.
So anything you say today that doesn't happen on Monday, will be a big shout.
I love it. I love the pressure. Thank you very much indeed, Andy. I thrive. Thank you. So let's get started. A few housekeeping notes beforehand. If I could just ask you to pop yourself on mute, please, just to avoid a bit of background, because we are recording today's session as part of the podcast as well. So we don't want too much of that unnecessary background noise there. If you do have any questions, pop them in the chat. As I'll keep an eye on that. As we go along, I'll try and keep an eye on those, and I'll tackle those as we go. But let's get started. I'm going to share my screen. We've got some slides to run through. And let's just close that there. Hide the floating panel. And there we go. Right. So is your council assertion 10 compliant and ready? But if it's not, don't worry. It's not too late for you to do something about it. What am I going to cover today? Well, as defined in Practitioner's Guide last year, a new governance requirement appeared. Assertion 10, as it has been commonly referred to. What is it going to include? Well, what we're going to cover today is what the email and domain name requirements are, again, as defined in Practitioner's Guide, the GDPR and data protection responsibilities, website accessibility compliance, this forms part of it, Communication and engagement. I'm going to touch a little bit on that towards the end. And I'm also going to touch on IET policies. So essentially, Assertion 10 is made up of four key things: domain names and email, website accessibility compliance, GDPR compliance, and IET policy. So it's all of the digital and data compliance elements. That's what it's called, digital and data. And as you can see there, Assertion 10, digital and data compliance is its actual name. And it is for compliance by AGAR 2526. So when we get our forms later this year, this is the point at which there is going to be a yes, no tick box. What are the key requirements? Well, the key requirements are you must have a council-owned domain name for the email that is a generic address. Don't worry about understanding what that means exactly at this minute. I'm going to go through the exact points in the coming minutes. Also, that the council must continue to comply with the website accessibility regulations. These are not new. A new thing, however, is the introduction for the requirement of an IET policy. That is a new thing. And of course, the other aspect of this, the fourth part of the Assertion 10 requirement, is the continued requirement reinforcement of compliance with UK GDPR and DPA, data protection. So those are the four things that make up Assertion 10, so that when you get the forms in front of you later this year, there will be a line item on the table that we go through. There will be an item on there that talks about your digital and data compliance. These are the things that make up that section. So let's get stuck in. We are going to start with the email and domain name bit, because this is probably the part that has created the most misunderstanding. What is no longer permitted are the use of free email services. Specifically, under Assertion 10 1.47 email management, every authority must have a generic email account hosted on an authority-owned domain name. That is, the example of that is clerk@abcparishcouncil.gov.uk or clerk@abcparishcouncil.org.uk. The key thing is not to use Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo, Outlook. abcparishclerk@gmail.com, abcparishcouncil@outlook.com, you must no longer use these free email services. You must use a domain name that the council owns. So, clerk@abcparishcouncil.gov.uk or .org.uk, or quite frankly, abcparishcouncil.com would meet your compliance, but not those free email services. So if you are using a free email service, you must get a domain name that you own. You've probably got one already, which is where your website lives, but you need to have an email service that hangs from that same domain name, so that your domain name where your website is www.abcparishcouncil.org.uk, and you have an email account that is clerk@abcparishcouncil.org.uk, for example. It's important to also remember it needs to be generic: clerk, parish clerk, town clerk at. You can also have a name-based one, so bob.smith@abcparishcouncil.org.uk, but the council's official address must be role-based, generic: clerk at, town clerk at, parish clerk at. You aren't always going to be in the seat, but continuity requires, as well as an element of UK GDPR, continuity requires that it is not name-specific. Now, another aspect that is so commonly misunderstood is, what about the staff, if you have any? What about the councillors? Let me bust a big myth. It is not a requirement or a legal requirement, as I have heard people say. It is not a requirement for everybody to have .gov.uk email. It is a requirement for the clerk to have domain-based email. But bear this in mind. If you are setting up a domain name, you've already got that. So you have the cost of that, whether it's just for the website and email or everybody's email. So it makes good sense and consistency for everybody. Now, the issues come around where councillors, for example, might be using personal email addresses. Now, this is not a new thing. This has been around for a long time. And as I'm sure many of the experienced clerks will know and be aware of, when councillors use their personal email addresses, and dare I say also clerks, there are a number of clerks using personal email addresses for their council communications. This is a huge UK GDPR problem because as a council, you don't have any right to access the data in those mailboxes. And so if you get a freedom of information, a subject access request, you are going to struggle to fulfill that responsibility. Now, councillors, as I've said, should not be using their personal email addresses, but there's nothing to stop them having a council-specific free email address. So for example, councillorbobsmith@gmail.com. That's okay, because Bob's using that Gmail address just for his council communications. But what's not acceptable is bigbobsmith1968@yahoo.co.uk, because as a council, you have no right or access to any of those communications. But what is best practice, and really best for the council and everybody from a separation of communication and data, is if councillors and all staff have email that is on the domain name. So for example, councillorbobsmith@abcparishcouncil.gov.uk, or indeed councillorbobsmith@abcparishcouncil.org.uk. This is fine. Because should you get a subject access request, should you get a freedom of information request, you as the clerk are going to be in a much better position to be able to fulfill your responsibilities, because the council owns the data, which means you have right to fulfill, you have right to access and right to fulfill your responsibilities. So let's just take a breath. What must and must not happen? Councils must not use free email services for the council clerk. So Gmail, Yahoo, Hotmail, those kind of things. The clerk, as a minimum, must have domain-based email. So clerk@abcparishcouncil.org.uk or .gov.uk. We'll go into the specifics of which domain types in a minute. And in relation to councillors and staff, ideally, you should be having them also using domain-based email. But at the very minimum, they should not be using personal email addresses. They need to be using an email address that is specific for their council communications. Why is this important? Well, it's important because, as I have said, the council doesn't own those platforms, Gmail, Yahoo, Hotmail. Alphabet owns Gmail, BT own Yahoo, Microsoft own Hotmail. You don't. And so the data is not yours. And so you've got no legal right over it. And getting access to it without the logins is nigh on impossible. We see and hear lots of stories all the time where clerks have used a Gmail or a Hotmail or a Yahoo for years and years and years, and then they've disappeared off, they've retired, they've not handed over any logins, and the incoming clerk cannot access the email. This is an all too common situation. The council has no right over it. So that is a really important reason, because it creates a GDPR, a risk, an exposure risk of you fulfilling your FOI or SAR responsibilities if you don't own that data. But actually, more fundamentally, there's no authenticity of message, because anybody can set up a free email address. Now, I am going to go into the nuance of the specific domain name types next. But on screen right now, these are the snippets. Now, John, we're going to be sharing the slides of today's session with our participants, but I would also make them directly available to anybody who wants to have the slides from me. All you need to do is go to the aubergine262.com website and contact me via that, and I'll gladly share the slides. But these are the snippets from Practitioner's Guide that relate specifically to the things that we're talking about today. I'm not going to read them individually. They're a bit dull. But let's take a pause for a minute. I don't want to assume, when I talk about domain names, I don't want to assume that everybody knows what I mean. There are three aspects of your visibility on the internet. Your address on the internet, your domain name, is the address. So as you can see on the screen, this is where Aubergine are based. We're in Leighton Buzzard in Bedfordshire. Our town council is called Leighton Linslade Town Council. And so the domain name is leightonlinslade-tc.gov.uk. This is the web address. This is where the pages and the files are visible. The email address, which is not the domain name and it is not the web address, the email address is info@leighton-tc.gov.uk. That's the messaging part of it. So you have the domain name, that's the address, and then all of the services, the website, the email, they hang below that. I just wanted to make sure that everybody was clear as to what I mean when I'm referring to domain name, website, email address. So let's talk about those domain names. Now, many of you are experienced clerks, so in the last couple of years, you will have seen the sterling work that the Government Digital Service did by making available a small amount of money as a grant to go towards the migration over to a .gov.uk domain name. It was a small pot of money, unfortunately, but it has created enough of a groundswell. A .gov.uk domain is the ultimate official domain name address on the internet for parish and town councils. It doesn't get any better. Why? Because the level of security and compliance and adherence to all of those things, notwithstanding the improvement to the authenticity of message, are the gold standard. It means that when you email somebody, that person can look at that and trust that. They know that it's definitely come from that council, because only a council can have a .gov.uk domain, and a .gov.uk domain can only be registered by authorised registrars such as Aubergine, who have to go through huge amounts of security processes and protocols and in order to be qualified enough to manage .gov.uk domains. Whereas .org.uk, .org.com, .net, .co.uk, nobody checks those. Anybody. We could right now go onto a registrar, let's just say 123reg, and we could create a brand new domain name, and let's call it johnparishcouncil.org.uk. Nobody is going to check and verify that we are actually a parish council and that we exist. So there's no verification, there's no scrutiny. And whilst the domain name itself does meet the Assertion 10 compliance because it would be registered in the council's name, it doesn't have that scrutiny to check. So it's good, but it's not best. Now, there are lots of other domain suffix, so .coms, .co.uk's, and so on. Can you use these to meet your Assertion 10 compliance? In the strictest sense of the compliance, yes, you can, as long as the council owns the domain name and you have a generic email address. So let's talk about, let's create an example. If you had johnparishcouncil.com and it was registered to the parish council, that's fine. And as the clerk, if you had clerk@johnparishcouncil.com as your email address, that's fine. You have met your Assertion 10 compliance. It's not ideal, but it is passable. What is best is .gov.uk. Right now, more than ever, there is an encouragement to claim your .gov.uk domain address if you have not done so already, notwithstanding the fact that organisations such as Aubergine, we're giving them away for free for the first year, which is worth £100. And you should be using it for both your email and your web address. This is a common mistake. Sometimes councils choose to get their .gov.uk domain and they use it for the email, but they don't point it at their website, or vice versa. They get their .gov.uk domain, they put it on their website, but they don't use it for their email and they continue using their Yahoo address because it's convenient. So this is a problem. If you haven't claimed your .gov.uk domain yet, if you are a parish council, there are three naming options available to you. They're on the screen. There are strict naming conventions for .gov.uk domain. You cannot just have whatever you want. So let's just say you live in a village called John. Sorry, John, I keep picking on you like this, but it's a good example. You can't have john.gov.uk. You can only have johnparishcouncil.gov.uk, john-pc.gov.uk, or johnparish.gov.uk. Those are the three permutations. And there are a couple less versions if you are a town or a community council that are on the screen. But what other benefits are there of having a .gov.uk domain? Well, there are lots of free services that Government's Digital Service provide those who have a .gov.uk email address, such as things like GovPay to be able to take online payments, such as security tools provided by the National Cybercrime Agency, early warning tools, filtering services. These are great. We're not going to go into these in any detail today, but they are great. So if you have a .gov.uk domain, you should look up those free services because they are very good. They all add to the armory that we should be introducing across both parish and town council level from an IT perspective to improve the standards, to improve the robustness of our network. Every day, we at Aubergine see domain names, websites coming under attack from nefarious individuals trying to take down the network. Most people outside the UK don't understand the nuance of parish and town councils. And you know, we are responsible for car parks, toilets, dog bins, and not central government funding or the Ministry of Defence. But outside individuals don't know that. And so they just attack anything that looks like it might be some form of government. So having a .gov.uk domain helps towards improving those overall security of our local government network. So let's recap. To meet your Assertion 10 compliance, you must have a council-owned domain name for your official email address, clerk@abcparishcouncil.org.uk, or what would be better, .gov.uk. Go ahead and claim your .gov.uk domain name from us for best practice. Now, you've got to also remember, please, please, please stop using those free email services, Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo. If you are migrating across to using a domain-based email, those things can be kept there stagnant for a while so that you can go and access the information that you might need to, notwithstanding the fact that there's going to be some finance, regulatory, contractual related things that you'll want to keep from those emails, but you should be setting a period of time by which those accounts are shut down. If you leave them open, just in case to go and look up because you got an email from a parishioner 11 years ago that you can remember, that is a data time bomb. Don't do it. You should consider approaching a registrar such as Aubergine to help you migrating across to .gov.uk if you aren't. Now, look, we're a little bit behind the curve for this year, but as with all important aspects of operation, budget planning. Hopefully, those of you who have been involved in the budget planning and you've submitted your precepts already, you've put in a reasonable budget to cover your IT systems, your software, your hardware, security. Because, and I can speak as a councillor, unfortunately, I see every day councillors feel that their role is to not spend any money, in fact, to unspend money. It's short-sighted. It's not right. It wouldn't happen in the commercial world. The same should happen in local government. You should set aside a sensible, appropriate budget to pay for your IT systems and standards. Unfortunately, lots and lots of parish councils suffer from data breaches and hacks because they are using antiquated systems. And that creates an enormous time draw on the clerk's time to then liaise with the ICO and fulfil all of those GDPR responsibilities. If a more robust IT system was in place, it wouldn't have happened. A takeaway piece of information. If you are not going to use a .gov.uk, let's just say you're going to use a .org.uk or .org or something like that for your domain name, please make sure that the domain is registered to the council and not an individual, the developer, not the last one, but the one before who's gone off to Thailand and he looks after it and now it's expired. And now your website's gone offline and your email stopped working. All of those things would go away if there was some better governance on who owns that digital landscape. So we're going to move on to the second part now of the Assertion 10 requirements. Website accessibility compliance. This is not a new thing. Many of you who have joined previous Scribe Academy events or seen me speaking at other events will know that I have been a big advocate of web accessibility compliance and online inclusion. The regulations have been in place now since 2018. That's a lot of precepts to budget for it. The regulations changed from WCAG 2.1 AA standards to 2.2 in October last year. These are written into the website and app public sector body legislation that requires you to meet your accessibility requirements. But also it's written into the Disability Act and now it is part of your audit. So you must have a compliant website. regardless of the domain name type, so the suffix .gov.uk, .org, and so on, this is separate to that. The address is largely irrelevant. You've got to meet the accessibility compliance. And you must have an up-to-date and relevant accessibility statement. Now, one of the things that a tip is that we see a lot is accessibility statements were encouraged to write and adopt back in 2018, 2019, and most councils did it. But unfortunately, those accessibility statements are exactly the same today as they were back then. But the problem is that every single day, or certainly every single week, you're updating your website with new words, new pictures, new files. But the accessibility statement isn't changing. And the accessibility statement is your council's statement to say, this is our website. This is what we know is accessible. This is what we know is not accessible. And that is a key thing. And our process for continuously checking it. So if your accessibility statement still says 2019 or 2020 on it, it is out of compliance because you clearly haven't checked it, because you will have continuously been adding content to your website. So I would encourage everybody to revisit your accessibility statement, much like every other policy that you have as a council. It's worth reviewing every year, because in a year, a lot can change on your website. One of the other things that we see a lot of as well is councils relying on what's called overlays or pop-up plugins to meet their accessibility compliance. These are the things that create a little blue symbol in the corner of your website. Sometimes it's a blue symbol with an outline of a man. Sometimes, rather offensively, it's a picture of a person in a wheelchair, which, of course, as we all know, is a physical disability, isn't the only type of disability. These overlays, these plugins, create more barriers than they solve, and they should not be used to meet your accessibility compliance. I'm going to go into this part in a bit more detail shortly. Another aspect is, well, what's the risk? What happens if I don't do any of this? What's going to happen? Well, up until Practitioner's Guide last year, where Assertion 10 requires you to meet these responsibilities, your biggest risks were a vexatious member of the public, or dare I say, a member of the public exercising their legal right to say, hey, your website is not accessible. I can't access it, the content, in a way that works for me because I have a disability. Perhaps it's a sight-related disability. And that person may exercise their legal right. So that is a risk to the council. And if you don't continue to meet those compliance, obviously now it's going to be a failure point on your radar. Ultimately, if you continuously ignore it, you may have your .gov.uk domain withdrawn. So, tips, what can you do? Ensure that the content that you upload to your website, minutes, agendas, all of those kind of documents, briefing documents, reports, make sure that they are accessible before you upload them. The website isn't going to magically make them accessible. Make sure that your Word template follows good best practice document creation from an accessibility point of view, and then save it as a PDF or indeed upload the Word document as well. Define in your accessibility statement about third-party content and documents older than a certain date. Avoid using those accessibility plugins to achieve compliance. Now, have a checking process. There is a brilliant free tool called Wave by WebAIM. It is a browser-based tool that you can add a little tool to your browser, whether you use Chrome, Edge, Firefox, that allows you to check a page at a time, and it'll tell you whether there are any accessibility issues. It's free, so you've got to do a page at a time. You're not going to be able to check the whole website, but it's a very good thing to have installed on your browser so that when you've made some changes to your website, give it a press just to make sure that you've not introduced something that is not accessible. Another tip I'd like to give you is forms. I see all too often forms being added in Word or PDF to a website that you're expecting people to fill in. Have you ever tried to fill in a Word or a PDF form from a website? It doesn't work. You can't fill in a PDF, it's locked. And if you've got a form that's in a Word document, I've got to download it. What are you expecting me to do? Print it out? Well, okay, well, if I print it out and I write on it, I don't have a scanner, so I can't scan it and send it back to you. How do I get it back to you? You've created a huge number of barriers. What you should be doing is any forms on your website should be actual website forms that you can fill in on the web page on a phone. More than 75% of all parish and town council website visitors, your parishioners, will be visiting your website on their phone. It'll be on their phone from the sofa, 9:42 p.m., probably complaining about the dog bin or a pothole. If all of this feels a little bit overwhelming, consider commissioning an accessibility audit to understand what your position is. Organisations like Aubergine, we can check an entire website and provide you with a report that essentially gives you a status of just how accessible the site is and what you should be considering. Because it might be that it is more sensible to consider commissioning a purpose-built thing, as well as getting that .gov.uk domain, which we're giving away for free, from £499. There you go, shameless plug. That'll be the last shameless plug. I said at the beginning I'm a councillor. There you go, I'm bearing all. I'm a councillor in Eton Bray, in Bedfordshire. We in Eton Bray use the Aubergine platform. And of course, if you go back and you check all of the minutes and agendas, you will see that I would have recused myself from the decision-making at those meetings. My fellow councillors made the right decision in choosing Aubergine for their website. But as you can see, what you're seeing here is if I press that Wave by WebAIM button on my website, it's that little blue one in the top right-hand corner where I'm wiggling the mouse, there you go, I get this fly-out box and it'll tell me straight away, have I got any errors, have I got any problems? So this is a very good way to give you a snapshot. Now, what I've also done is put a little bit of a snapshot of a typical what is good form. So not a Word doc, not a PDF, a web form. As you can see there, we've got our memorial garden plaque application form, because there's a really good chance that the person who's going to be applying for a memorial plaque in our cemetery is going to be filling it in on their phone, if not on a computer. But either way, it's the form that needs filling in rather than downloading it, printing it out, and then holding it in your hand and going, well, how do I get this to the clerk? So on your screen right now are the top tips that I want to give you in terms of publishing to make sure that your website is accessible as it can be. I don't think I'm going to go into each and every single one of these today. You can have the slides. I'm going to pick out a few. One of the ones that you can make a really huge positive impact on your website is using descriptive link text. So not using click here, not using download or here or read more, making sure that the link text is describing what it's going to open or where it's going to take somebody. So, for example, January 2025, full council minutes. That is the link text that links to the document. Or if it's going to go to the Central Bedfordshire Council website, that is the link text. Not click here, not download. The reason for this is people who use assistive technology, screen readers and other similar things, those are read out audibly. And so click here doesn't tell them where they're going. Whereas if it's a descriptive link text, the computer will audibly read, there is a link to the Central Bedfordshire website, there is a link to the January 2025 minutes. So that has a big positive impact. And whilst we're talking about URLs, please avoid pasting whole web addresses written out onto the page, http://. The reason for this is assistive technology reads web addresses out one letter at a time slowly. It's an awful experience for people who are loss of sight and the computer reads it out one letter at a time. I saw on a website before we took over it a link that had 250 characters in it to get to the file. So that 250 individual letters were read out by a screen reading piece of software. What an awful experience that is. The last thing that I'm going to tell you about to make a positive impact on your website is use sequential headings, structured headings, not just on web pages, but also in your Word documents. What do I mean by sequential or structured headings? I mean H1, H2, H3. They're not there for styling. They're there for structure. H1 should be only used once and is the title of your document or your page. H2 are the main sections on your web page or your document. H3 are subsections within those. Why is this important? Well, again, assistive technology used by people with disabilities reads those headings and subheadings first. Imagine a typical parish council meeting document. I can imagine mine from last Monday. 9 pages long. If I was loss of sight and I was interested in the planning, I would have to listen to the entire minutes being audibly read to me to learn that planning was dealt with in the last section. That's a terrible experience. So by adding structure using H1, H2, H3 to your Word documents and also web pages means that the assistive technology can read those headings and subheadings and the person can jump to them. It's much, much better experience. I'm going to come on to the last key part of things now. This is the part that is probably most variable, I would say, across parish and town councils. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about an IT policy. What is an IT policy? Well, an IT policy is really no different to any other policy that you have ratified in your council. It's a set of instructions. It's a set of information that says, this is how we do things. Well, the IT policy is here to wrap all of the things that I've talked about today together. It's wrapping all around it. It's providing it as a complete piece. It's the set of instructions. Now, obviously, being a man, I don't read instructions. But an IT policy is for all of those sensible people that do read instructions. It is your council's position on how you want people who work for the council, so staff, but also members, maybe volunteers, anybody who uses the council's communication, the software and hardware to conduct business. Because you want a set of, let's call it rules of engagement. Now, you can also wrap into this IT policy things like personal equipment. So at Eton Bray Parish Council, where I'm a councillor, I have my Eton Bray Parish Council email on my personal phone. And that's okay, because we permit it as part of our IT policy. But we have a set of rules that says, when or if I were to leave as a councillor, I must remove that account from my phone, and the clerk or member of staff will then change the logins for that email account so that I can no longer use it. It's a set of instructive rules because we aren't always going to be councillors and clerks in the councils that we're in, and we want to leave a good instructive legacy for those people who come into the seat afterwards. But also, and dare I say it, like it happened at my own council a few months ago, we had a member of the public appear in the public gallery. Shock, horror. Usually we stare at empty seats. But we had a guy sit there. A public open forum, 10 minutes. Would you like to introduce yourself, sir? And what is it that you're here for? Well, I'd like to become a parish councillor. A gasp went out. Fresh meat. Well, anyway, he presented himself very well. And he was co-opted there and then. I think it took about 11 seconds. No, I'm joking. He was co-opted. But we had an IT policy for him to read to make sure that he understood how to use his .gov.uk email address and how he should conduct himself online. So what are, you know, surely there are templates. Well, there are. More recently, NALC have issued a pretty good starting point. There is a very good starting point that NALC created off the back of the SAP, Smaller Authorities Proper Practices Panel, their draft one that came out when the Practitioner's Guide was issued. But bear this in mind, please. Whilst you can go and download it for free from the NALC website, it's a starting point. It's a conversation starter for you and any colleagues and your councillors. It talks about the main things that you need to consider, such as what happens when there is a data breach. What are the processes that you need to follow when it comes to email and emails and rescinding and providing access and so on. There's no boilerplate that's going to be just a straight copy and paste for you, I'm afraid, because your computers, your software, all of your individual setups are unique to you and your council. But those templates do have a very good starting point, but you are going to need to adjust them to make them suitable for you. Please bear in mind when you are doing that, consider data leaks, breaches, so email accounts getting hacked, shared files accidentally getting out into the public or being mishandled, having a process. What happens if? Because you're experienced clerks, you may know what to do. But an inexperienced clerk might come into the post And if you don't have the process written down in your IT policy, they might not know what to do. Having a statement in the IT policy that says all parish councillors and council staff will use council provided email addresses only for their email communications, and they will not use their personal email addresses for any council communications. This is a really good thing to put into your IT policy, because it gives you the vehicle to be able to enforce to those councillors who might be a little bit resistant at shifting from their Hotmail, because that's on their phone and that's what they've always used. The problem for you as a council is lost communications. You can't fulfill your regulatory responsibilities when it comes to SAR or FOI if those emails that relate to something important are stuck in bigbob68@yahoo.co.uk's email address. So have those rules written into your email, because it gives you the vehicle, it gives you the teeth to be able to say to Councillor A, we ratified this policy and that 3 months ago you agreed to it, and yet you are still using your Hotmail address. Also, things like cyber threats, or rather cyber security prevention, have something in there that says all councillors and staff will have an industry standard antivirus on their computers. If you don't define it, you can't expect people to have it after the event if something goes wrong. These sorts of things are all worth considering. Now, a lot of these things are baked into those templates that are part of that NALC starting point. But consider the specifics to your parish and your town. For example, you might have CCTV in your parish or your town. And as such, who has access to the CCTV data? Who can log in? Who can look at that? It's worth you writing some information about who should and shouldn't and what happens to that data into your IT policy. Now, don't replicate things in your IT policy that are in other policies. Just refer to those other policies in your IT policy. But you are going to need to have an IT policy as part of your Assertion 10 compliance. What goes into a good IT policy? Well, always define the scope and the purpose at the beginning. What are you trying to include in it, and who is it for? So all councillors, all staff, all volunteers, anybody who conducts business on behalf of the parish council. Purpose. The purpose is to improve the security and robustness of the council's IT and data. Starts to think about other aspects. Data retention. How long do you hold on to data? You might already have a data retention policy. If you do, great. If you don't, consider having one, because you should not be holding on to data ad infinitum, just in case that person emails you to say, 11 years ago, we wrote to you to tell you that the dog bin was going to fall off its hinges, and it has now. Don't hold on to that email indefinitely, because it's containing personally identifiable information. You don't need to. Have a data retention policy that gives you the ability to purge unneeded data at certain intervals. Now, you might like to also consider wrapping into your IT policy, particularly if you're a smaller council, social media use and the boundaries. Social media, I think, is going to be a little bit of outside of the scope of today. All I would say to you is have rules of engagement for social media, because if you don't, there will be at some point somebody who goes off the rails, a councillor who comments accidentally as a councillor or on behalf of the council on Facebook, and Pandora's box lid has been opened. So if you don't have a social media policy, definitely something worth sticking on the agenda over the next couple of months for council to consider, along with a data retention policy. So those are the sorts of things that make a good IT policy. Don't make it too technical. Don't try and get fancy with yourself. Use plain English, because if you can understand it, then people who follow on from you will also understand it. And also, don't make it too onerous. Don't say things like, everybody will perform a weekly antivirus check on all devices. Great idea, never going to happen. You can always improve things, but at least have a starting point. Because without the IT policy, notwithstanding the fact that it is now going to be required on your agar, but without it, there's no rules and there's no guidance. As those new councillors come in, passing them the IT policy for them to read at the same point as their onboarding signing forms is a good practice thing to do. Straight away, they know what they should and they shouldn't do. So look, we've brought all of this to a close now. NALC, SLCC, your county association will have those IT policy templates for you to start. Don't start from a blank page. And make sure that you adjust it to make it work for your council and get it adopted before the end of March. What I would always say is make sure that everybody's trained. Make sure that people understand what it is to use council email. You know, we flippantly talk about these things, but not everybody knows. So make sure that as a council, you're always allowing a little bit of time for training, an experienced councillor perhaps to show a new one coming in. And of course, like all policies, make sure that they are reviewed annually, because your IT infrastructure, your software, how you do things in the course of a year will almost certainly change. If you're going to be changing your accounting package across to, for example, Scribe, you're going to want to make sure that those sorts of things are factored into the IT policy. So we've brought the session to an end. I want to reinforce the fact that this is not a paperwork exercise. This is bringing together all of the things that improve the overall IT robustness and professionalism. It's wrapping in some processes that have all been out there already: website accessibility compliance, having a domain name, being able to fulfill your GDPR responsibilities, getting into that data. All of these things are known, but it's bringing it together into a holistic single element. This is a good thing. And it will help improve your online communications and your ability to perform any of those horrendous FOI and SARs.
Awesome. Thanks. Really appreciate that, Mark. That was a really good event. Lots of good questions.
Yeah.
Again, thanks for taking the time to come and speak at Scribe Academy. So if someone only remembers one thing from this episode, what do you think it should be?
Yeah, I mean, again, let me just add my thanks as well for everybody attending and listening. One thing to take away, I think probably the takeaway is, if you aren't using a .gov.uk domain, you're using another suffix, let's just say it's .org.uk or .org or something like that, make sure that you go away and you check who the domain is registered to, and make sure it is registered to the council and not an individual. As I will have mentioned in the session, there are unfortunately all too many occasions where the domain is registered to not the last web developer, but the one before, and he's gone off to Thailand and he can't be contacted, and then the domain expires and then you can't do anything about it. So I think that would be a really good thing to keep an eye out for.
Awesome. Okay, great. And I was going to ask you two questions. So I'm going to ask the idea is all future guest speakers will have the same two questions. So they're kind of common questions you get in podcasts. So my first one is, if you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give them one bit of advice, what would you give to that 18-year-old boy?
Wow. That's a really long time ago, John. But do you know what? It won't be professional or career based. Do you know what it'll be? It'll be when you start hearing about something called Bitcoin, buy low.
Oh, yes, 100%. We all had that moment. I kind of remember, like, oh my God, great regrets. Buy that Bitcoin. Good one. And then there's one final question. So this is more passing it on. So you obviously don't have this, but can you leave a question for the next guest? So you're the first podcaster. Can you leave a question?
That's a really good idea. Okay, for the next guest, I would like to say, if you are brutally truthful with yourself, what one thing do you know you don't do particularly well that you want to get better at?
Awesome. Excellent. Okay, thanks again. Have a good day, Mark. Cheers.
Thank you for
inviting. That's a wrap for our first podcast. Hope you all enjoyed it. Cheers. Thank you.